Talk Central is brought to you by TomTom Africa, a leading international enabler of accurate location-based platforms throughout Africa, offering innovative, comprehensive, and high-quality digital maps to businesses and governments. For more information, visit tomtom.co.za/geospatial.
I'm Richard van Berg.
And I'm Duncan MacLeod.
This is Talk Central, episode 126 for the weekend starting 8 May 2015.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, where you'll find South Africa's best technology journalism.
That's right, Duncan. No headlines like a rat that won't die, Vuta floods, and a crazy Dokoloshi from hell.
No crazy Dokoloshis from hell on Tech Central. On Talk Central this week, we talk about Elon Musk's Powerwall solution and how it might just change the world.
Also this week, Telkom's wholesale price cuts, the new MVNO Me and You Mobile, and Microsoft's Bull Conference announcement.
Before we get to all of that, though, we need to pay the bills. We'll be back in just a moment.
The Vox Telecom Cloud is the future of business. Developed from the ground up, it's a turnkey, fully managed approach to the cloud. It offers you guaranteed support, a national network with true redundancy, fully managed services across all layers, and most importantly, a single point of accountability. The Vox Telecom Cloud. It's how cloud should be. To find out more about the Vox Telecom Cloud, SMS your name to 45454 or visit voxtelecom.co.za. Standard rates apply.
Well, welcome to the show. Hi, Rafa.
How's it, Duncan?
Good. Recovering from all the holidays.
Yeah, it seems like we can get back on track with the working days again. But I did enjoy those holidays. It was good.
Very nice,
good.
Back on track with the podcast, too, which has fallen by the wayside over the last few weeks. Apologies for that. But back on track and lots to talk about. So let's kick straight into it. And without doubt, the biggest announcement of the last week has been the announcement from Elon Musk about the Powerwall and other battery solutions from his new business, Tesla Energy. I managed to watch the keynote. You haven't had a chance to see it yet, Richard, but I highly recommend anyone who hasn't seen it yet to go and have a look. It's only about 18 minutes long, so it's not one of these 2 hour to 3 hour mega keynotes that seems to be favored by the likes of Apple and Microsoft these days. It was short, sharp, and to the punch, but to the point. But it was a really interesting keynote and well worth watching. I thought it was almost the antithesis of a tech keynote. Here Elon Musk got on stage. He looked almost a little nervous, I thought, when he first started talking. There was no fanfare or music to welcome him. He just walked on stage and started having a chat. And it was almost like a bit of a fireside chat he had with the audience, even though he was on stage in front of a large screen. He stammered a bit through his presentation, while he was, he's clearly confident about the products he's developed here. He didn't come across as bombastic in his presentation, and I think it was a welcome change from what we see in from tech industry keynotes these days. It was short. It was to the point. Didn't drag on for 2 or 3 hours. What he announced, while not revolutionary, because the technology behind it has been here for some time, it certainly has the potential to change the world in that he's going to be doing this on an industrial scale.
Yeah. He's also adapted a lot of the old ideas around this technology, the battery-powered technology, and he's upscaled a bit.
Upscaled to an enormous amount. In fact, they're talking about gigawatt hours of storage capacity at scale solutions here, powering entire cities. The main product that I think will interest you and me is the Powerwall solution that he announced, is really an attempt to get homeowners off the grid, at least to reduce their reliance on
the grid. I mean, it's an amazing idea if you think about it. Almost like a one-stop solution to bring out your house off the grid, by mounting this battery in your wall. With the power of Tesla behind it, or the engineers of Tesla behind it, I can only imagine that the kind of technology they're putting in is certainly going to set the standard for a lot of things going forward, and a lot of people are going to potentially adapt some of the technology, and we'll see better evolution of battery technologies as a result of this, without a doubt.
It's a well-packaged solution. It's good-looking as well. It comes in a range of colors. You can mount it in your garage wall. In fact, you can mount it just about anywhere. The idea is that it stores energy either from the grid or from, even better, solar paneling.
Yeah.
so that you can either use this stored electricity when, and I know that's not the case in South Africa at the moment, although there's talk of it coming, when demand is high and therefore prices of electricity are higher, allows you to switch across to the battery to consume your stored power and then to use recharge the batteries or to use grid power when prices are lower.
Yes,
we don't
have
that sort of differentiated pricing in South Africa yet, but it's probably coming quite soon. But I think more interesting in the South African context is the load shedding that we experience and the ability to power your house when the power goes out, and to reduce your electricity bill, because power bills are going up 10-20% a year. If you can couple this with some solar PV, you can really reduce your reliance on the grid, if not get off the grid entirely.
Sure.
With not too much cost. Mm. It's not going to be cheap. I mean, this isn't going to appeal to the mass market. But, you'd probably be able to put one of these systems in with some solar PV for the upper five-digit number range in rands.
Still a lot easier than what any solution that's available now. I mean, for anybody that really wants to get off the grid today or at least implement a battery solution at home, you're going to have to buy lots of different parts and probably kind of hack your way through to get the exact kind of solution that you need.
Yes.
Where this power wall, this is a component thing. It's like you buy it in the shop, you mount it on the wall, probably plug it into a DB somewhere, and that's it.
You still need an electrician to hook it up, I would imagine, unless you're an electrical engineer. But certainly it's making it a lot easier, and I think it's opening consumers' eyes to how you can actually go about doing this. I know a lot of people, a lot of South Africans, well, I'd say a lot, but certainly probably thousands of South Africans have already done this using car batteries and inverter systems and that sort of stuff. But this makes it sexy. It's not, you're not going to have dozens of car batteries on your garage floor.
Yeah, exactly.
This is something you mount on the wall of your garage, for example, or on an outside wall even, and just hook it up. And it's designed to be plugged into solar PV already. So you're not going to have to do a lot of research and a lot of.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to be a component solution where you buy it off the shelf or online. Yeah. Somebody comes and install it, and you're good to go.
And in fact, they've announced partnerships as part of the press announcement for this thing. Mm. They've announced partnerships with a whole range of companies, including solar PV providers, inverter providers, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah,
installation companies. They're also working with utilities. The idea being that this thing is completely scalable, that a company like Eskom could buy it and install it on vast scale as a backup solution to perhaps cope when the grid is under pressure, or to manage a demand or peaks on the grid if for example a power station is being taken down or brought back online. Really interesting stuff, and I think this would be particularly interesting when it's tied to solar farms. So if you have a vast solar farm, and there are a few of those being built in South Africa at the moment, we've written about them in quite a bit of detail on Tech Central in the past, hook those things up to a battery solution like this, and you can store that battery instead of pushing it straight into the grid and potentially losing it.
Yeah, and this hybrid solution is certainly going to be the only way South Africa is going to be able to get enough people on or off the grid, at least to preserve a lot of the power that we produce. Sorry, Elon Musk also said that you can stack these things, so you can create more power than just what one unit can do. You can power small suburbs or small
cities.
Communities at least. Yeah.
Cities. He said this is going to be infinitely scalable. And the scale he's talking about here of deploying a billion of these things across the planet to actually meaningfully reduce our reliance on fossil fuels.
I think it's going to take a company like Tesla, who's already made a name for itself in the battery industry in many ways, to set a trend so that others can follow, or at least see what works and what doesn't work. And I think I would also much rather bet my money on Tesla's technology, battery technology, than using something like car batteries, which is dated and uses. It's not the same chemicals that's in the battery, and they're not going to last as long, and the recharge time
These are lithium ion, so it's the same battery technology that powers your smartphone.
It's
not the It's not the the big ugly polluting lead acid batteries that you're used to, that many people actually do use for these solutions. I don't know what that, I don't know how polluting a lithium ion battery actually is at the end of the day, and what sort of maintenance it's going to require over a period of time compared to, I know lead acid batteries have to be checked every couple of years and topped up and all that sort of thing, but I actually don't know what the lifespan is of a lithium ion battery and what how you'd service it.
But sure, I'm sure that there'll be a system in place where you can swap out batteries, but I don't think it'll be a year or two yearly thing. I mean, I'm sure these things will last 5 to 10 years.
At least 10 years. At least 10 years. But yeah, it's interesting. So starting at $3,000, so that's 36,000 rand, and that's before taxes and import duties and installation and solar PV and all that sort of thing. So you're looking at least, I would say, probably 45,000 rand for this unit. You're then looking at additional costs. If you haven't got solar PV, you're going to have to install that as well. Yeah. Although you don't have to have solar PV. You can power this thing through the grid as well. Although ultimately, I think you'd want to put solar PV in and connect it via that.
Well, if you're going to be charging your Tesla vehicle, you also want free energy by using the solar panels, I think. Yeah. And that connects.
And I think that's where this whole idea came from, actually. I mean, BMW is talking about that as well. They're talking about building, I forget what they call it, but they're talking about turning people's garages, creating these solar carports where you pull in and you plug your car in and it charges via the sun. I'm sure there's this thinking all came out of the, you know, how do we charge these Tesla electric vehicles? And it's an illogical extension of that. I mean, you know, what's the solution for, you know, we're going to be charging your car. How can we use the same technology to charge your home or power your home at the same time?
Exactly. No, I think it's a brilliant move. And then I'm so glad to see that a South African is at the head of this.
Yeah. And it was so fun to listen to watch the podcast and still hear that he's got a bit of his South African twang still. He's sounding more and more American, but you know, some of the words still, he clearly has that South African accent still.
It will be interesting to see if he's going to, I mean, I doubt that he will, but if he's going to put special emphasis on trying to get this or similar technology into South Africa, seeing that, you know, this is where he comes from, and then I'm sure he knows about the issue, the power issues we have here.
He's been out of the country for 27 years, so I don't know if, you know, I don't know how much affinity he still has for this country.
But I'd like to think that it may might say, okay, yeah, guys, let's try and get this to South Africa sooner.
I hear he does come here on holiday and stuff from time to time, so I'm sure he still has connections with this country. It certainly looks like this product was designed for South Africa, but of course we know that's not the case.
No, for sure.
Just happens to be a great solution for South Africa.
And he's another step closer to becoming Tony Stark, let's be honest. I mean, if you look at the kind of things he's talking about and unveiling these days.
Yes.
I almost expect that the Powerwall to fold out into a robotic suit or something. That could be amazing. How do you power your suit?
Yeah. Well, he still wants to go to Mars in his lifetime and establish a colony there. So,
well, these batteries could help a lot if there is a problem with power. I mean, there's no utilities on Mars, right?
Yeah. Anyway, so that's Elon Musk. Quite an impressive announcement. Go watch that video. It's only 18 minutes long. You'll find it on YouTube. Well worth the view. Just for how down to earth he is compared to these other keynotes where these brash executives get up and, you know, we're going to change the world, we're the greatest company in the history of companies, this is how many products we sell every year, etc. He got up there and he was actually rapping with the audience at some points. Someone shouted, you couldn't quite hear what they were saying, but occasionally someone would shout in the audience. I think someone said, "We love you, Elon." And he laughs with them, and it was a very sort of very different to the highly choreographed, stage managed big tech industry events that we've gotten used to, and it was, I think, a very welcome change.
I think also it's because his intentions, or, you know, I guess his vision for the things he wants to do in his life is for the greater good rather than for particularly for just the business.
Which and we haven't touched on this, and maybe we should actually before we move on, is the fact that this technology, all the patents around this Powerwall solution are being open sourced.
Oh, really? That's interesting.
So he said in his keynote, he said, "We want other companies to take our patents, and we want them to build technology like this. We don't mind. We want the more people are doing this, the better, because it's we're doing this for mankind, and we're not doing this for profit. Not only for profit.
But look, it'll certainly help further their cause. I mean, if they can get, and if they can produce a lot of these batteries, I mean, and also if their technology is still far superior than anybody else building on their spec." they'll still do very well for themselves.
Certainly Tesla is, I mean, it's built a name for itself of quality, and you know, it's you know, I would say it's built a name for quality like Apple has. If you want the best, you're going to go buy the Tesla solution. If you want a cheaper alternative, you're probably going to buy the Chinese alternative.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and they're certainly not the only electric vehicle, but if you look at the amount of hype that you've seen around the Tesla brand and the vehicles around the world, I mean, even BMW with electric vehicles, so they do spend a lot more marketing, and they're global, but I can guarantee more people know about Tesla than they would do about the i3.
And which would you rather have, a Tesla or a BMW electric car?
No, I think the Tesla
for sure. Doubt. That tells you something, doesn't it, about the brand.
Aspiration. And like you said, it's exactly what Apple's done with their brand. You know, it's good quality, it's aspirational, but you know, it's something that very few people can rival.
And what's interesting here is that I think the other point about the keynote is Musk wasn't announcing just another Me Too smartphone. He's announcing something here that's actually going to do some good for the world.
It's actually a practical solution. I mean, if it was all similar to his Hyperloop, that invention that he just put out to the world and said anybody can build it. I mean, it's years ahead of its time, but the fact that he's not held on to it or put patents on this thing so nobody else can use it.
Yeah.
I like the way of thinking.
It is patented, but he's open source.
Oh, he's open source. Yeah, you're right. That kind of thinking, I think, hopefully will ignite the same kind of thing in other CEOs or other businesses, you know, for the greater good, not just for our own profit.
Yeah. All right. Well, closer to home, Telkom has been doing some interesting things as well, announcing, I think it was early last week, announcing some fairly radical cuts to, well, they seem to be radical anyway, to their wholesale data price, or the prices of some of their wholesale data products, including IPC, Internet Protocol Connect, which is the product that most ISPs use to provide ADSL services to end users. And we haven't seen any retail price cuts yet, at least not at the time of recording, and we're recording this a couple of days ahead of publication on Wednesday, the 6th of May. I must get the date right. so there may be some announcements made between the recording of this podcast and publication on Friday, but it certainly seems quite radical. They're talking about price cuts, I think, of up to 63% in IPC. I don't know if all the ISPs are going to get nearly as much as that. But certainly the price cuts seem to go beyond what, and Telkom says they go beyond what they agreed to with the Competition Commission, I think last year or the year before last, in their settlement agreement over their prior anti-competitive behavior. And they seem to be genuine about trying to build their wholesale business as a building bulk there. And they seem to have come to the realization very late, I must say, that the right model in telecoms is to go for scale instead of throttling the amount of bandwidth. Make it as cheaply available as possible and open it up to everybody and grow the demand and grow your network.
Exactly.
And it's the right strategy because, you know, Telkom's DSL network has stagnated below 1 million users. And the only way you're going to get that up is by making this more affordable and more compelling than the mobile alternatives. And one way of doing that is by slashing wholesale rates, and this is what they seem to have done. We haven't seen the reaction yet, but I would anticipate, if it hasn't been announced by the time this podcast is published, I would anticipate that within the coming days, we're going to see a number of announcements from ISPs of reduced prices and possibly quite radically reduced prices.
Sure. So why do you think they had price increases for their consumer customers or home customers a while back?
Oh, you mean the line rental?
The line rental went up, yeah. I mean, it seemed to be counterproductive to what they're trying to do.
It does. I don't know the answer to that question. You'd have to ask Telkom that directly, but I would imagine that it's got to do with the access line deficit that they harp on about. They lose money for every line in service from the basic line rental amount. So they may be trying to deal with that, cutting prices in areas where they can afford to cut prices, but increasing prices where they need to deal with loss-making entities or business areas. And certainly that basic line rental cost is not enough but the access line deficit is arguably quite large. Telkom argues it's huge. You speak to people at ICASA, they say perhaps it's not as large as Telkom makes it out to be, but it's still there. So it probably makes business sense for them to try and to deal with that loss-making part of the business. It's never popular with customers, and they've got it in the neck, I think, from many people. And it's a difficult one for Telkom. Mm. This is a loss-making part of their business. I spoke to Telkom CEO Brian Armstrong about this about a year ago, and he said that there's no direct correlation between line rental prices and the number of fixed lines in service. It seems hard to believe, but that's he says they've modelled it, they've done the numbers, they've done the analysis, and there is no direct link to the annual increase in basic line rental and the annual decrease in the number of lines of service. It looks like, to me, it looks like there's a direct correlation, but he says there isn't. I'm sure they've crunched the numbers, so I guess we can't disbelieve them.
Sure.
But it is an interesting one. At the same time they're pushing up basic line rental, they're cutting wholesale prices. So I guess on one hand Telkom giveth, and on the other hand Telkom
take
away.
It away.
All hell Telkom.
but a positive announcement, this wholesale price cut, and the fact that it goes beyond what was required of them suggests that this isn't, this is a new Telkom trying new things, and let's hope the retail ISPs respond by cutting their prices or offering additional value-added services.
Because that could balance out the line rental increase a little bit, and then
could even overcome it. Yeah,
that'll be great. Yeah. And also, I think it's a good thing for the industry or for competition in the industry, giving these ISPs a bit more leeway with their pricing.
Because that's where the real competition has come from. I mean, once one ISP cuts, they all cut. So someone's going to pull the trigger in the coming days, if they haven't already by the time you're listening to this.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the ADSL data is already so cheap, it'll just be really good to see a drop a bit more. Yeah.
I think a lot of consumers will just want additional data, actually, because, if you're paying a certain amount for, say, 100 gigs a month, and this will give you 150 gigs a month, I think many consumers will be happy to get the 150 gigs a month and pay the same price.
Yeah, yeah.
Because your demands are always increasing. You're always watching more video, you're consuming the internet more.
Exactly.
And as your line speeds improve, you're just going to keep consuming more data.
And you hit the nail on the head there. I mean, as long as they also continue with the line speed improvements, and I think they're doing it. What I see in my neighbourhood already is there's a lot of work going into putting in the VDSL, or at least there's a fibre backbone, but they'll do VDSL options to the home, and it seems to be very popular. At least we're seeing some movement in that. And
VDSL is very good. I mean, you and I talk a lot about getting fibre to the home and that sort of thing, but if you've got a 20 or 40 megabit per second VDSL connection, that's actually pretty fast.
Yeah, well, I'm hoping the 40 meg VDSL goes live in our neighbourhood soon, then I'll be able to report back.
Okay.
I've spoken to some people that has that, and a 20 meg line is more than sufficient for most power users.
You can do HD streaming easily on that. You can probably do 4K streaming on that.
My only thing really is I would love to see a better upstream rates, or at least
that's one of the big problems of ADSL.
Without going to an asynchronous, a very expensive business solution, it would be nice to have a 2 or 3 meg up, a 40 meg down. That would be nice.
What does Telkom offer on fiber, do you know? Mm-hmm. It's 100 megs down, I think it's 5 or 10 up, I forget which, but it's a decent up. They have increased the upload speed though on some of their packages. I know I'm on a 10 meg line, and it used to be a 512 up, and it's now a 1 meg up.
Yes, mine is the same. I'm on an 8 meg line, well, 10 meg, but it syncs at 8 meg, and it's just under a meg up, which is better than what it was, but it's still a small jump.
It's still slow.
It needs to go into the megabytes now, which is, I don't mind paying for the outward data, and that's the thing, they could probably make more money if they allow us to do this kind of thing. Just to give us a better output service.
Yeah.
And when you look at things like competing with the fiber installations, a lot of those fiber installations will be used for security cameras, and for that you need a good up speed upload speed, rather than just a very fast download speed.
That's true. Great. Well, let's keep an eye on the space and see what happens at the retail level, but it's promising sounds coming out of Telkom, which is good. What's next?
New mobile operator.
Yeah, new MVNO. SIM only. The story's a little old now, so let's get through it quickly. But if anyone has missed it, this is a new MVNO, mobile virtual network operator, in the vein of Virgin Mobile in this market, and offering a SIM-only solution, month to month. So no 24-month lock-in, but you don't get a handset. But I think more and more consumers are looking for that type of solution. They don't want to lock in. They don't want 24-month lock-in, and they don't want to have to pay the operator what they do for that subsidized handset.
Yeah, a lot of people have old handsets. I mean, there's been generations of mobile phone users now. There's enough hand-me-downs, and You know, as long as one person in the family upgrades their contract every 2 years, I think there's generally a good steady flow of handsets. You're right. I mean, you don't need to get a new handset all the time anymore.
Yeah, unless you're you or me or
power user. Yeah.
Then we're going to have a new handset every second week. But
But our families would love this.
For sure. So an interesting move. It's out of Ignition Group, a company based down in Schlange near Durban. And the sister company to MVNX, which is the enabling business that has launched a number of MVNOs now, including Mr. Price or MRP Mobile and Mr. Price Stable. So we'll keep an eye on them. They're online only, so you have to sign up online, use a credit card. All the support is online. It's a completely virtual business.
I like that. It's another solution that's easy to get to if you connect to the internet.
Yeah. But piggybacks on Cell C's network, so... you know, approach with a little bit of caution if you're worried about network quality.
I guess that's the only downside, right?
Yeah.
But I mean, is the MVNO model still a profitable one? I mean, it would seem if you look at the likes of Virgin Mobile and those guys, I mean, it doesn't seem to be as popular or as big as the.
No, it's a niche offering. I mean, I think the biggest market for MVNOs is Germany, if I'm not mistaken, where about 20% of the market is subscribed via an MVNO. Sure. So it's big there. But it's still a minority of the market. And I think that, I mean, I was chatting to Steve Bailey, who heads up MVNX, which is the enablement business that makes this possible, ex-Virgin Mobile CEO here in South Africa. And he said it's, you know, these are niche solutions. You know, they're value adds for established brands typically. So MRP Mobile, probably not going after more than a few thousand or a few tens of thousands of customers Mr. Price Retail Stable. I think an interesting one is going to be, in this MVNO space, is going to be the launch of F&B Mobile, which is coming very soon. In fact, I'm surprised it hasn't been launched yet. It seems they seem to be delaying it. I'm not sure why. But I'd expect it to launch within the next month or two. And that's going to be an interesting one because, you know, here's a big established bank with a strong retail presence, good customer service, established loyalty. They're selling devices already. Yeah. They've got an established loyalty scheme in eBucks, which they can tie aggressively into this mobile product. I think that they could really shake up the market because I think the other banks will then take a look and say, well, maybe we need to be doing this as well. I think F&B will be the big one. Of course, F&B again will be working on Cell C's network, and I think that may be the reason for some of the delays that we've seen. I think perhaps F&B is a bit concerned about the quality of Cell C's network.
That is a true concern. And but I mean, good for Cell C. They seem to be they'll be improving their revenue, I guess.
And one hopes that if F&B does come to market, that this is going to prompt Vodacom and MTN finally to start offering decent wholesale solutions in the MVNO market.
Yes,
because they've been allergic. They've been just about as allergic to MVNOs as they have been to dual SIM phones. And and you know, actually opening up this market to competition, MVNO, a proper wholesale model from these two operators is crucial. Mm-hmm. The dual SIM one is a big one as well. But you know, certainly the wholesale, opening up the market from a wholesale perspective by these two operators in a structured way is crucial.
Yeah.
So hopefully, F&B coming to market will force their hands as well as the other banks. And start to make this market really interesting indeed.
Yeah. There's a lot of room for growth.
For sure. So I think the last bit of news we need to talk about this week is Microsoft's Build Conference, which is always a big event. It's their annual event. I think it's always hosted in the US, if I'm not mistaken, where they get all their hardcore developers together to talk about building code for Windows.
Yeah, it's a geeky conference.
A very, very techy, very geeky conference. They had some interesting announcements this year. I think the one that really caught my eye was the fact that it's going to be dirt easy now for iOS and Android app developers to port their apps to Windows.
Yeah, definitely.
It's huge.
No, it is. It's massive, and it's reminiscent of the new Microsoft that we've been seeing of late, because they're really moving away from trying to build everything on their platform or focused only on the Windows platform. But you know, they're now in a position where they can say, listen, we can open these things up. We want people to develop for all platforms. We want our software to run on all platforms. It's something we haven't seen we have never seen from Microsoft up until the last few years. If you make it easier for programmers to develop their apps and their software for majority of their customers, I think you'll get a much better uptake, and that was a big problem with Windows Phone.
It has been, and this neatly solves it. I mean, you're not going to be able to run Android and iOS apps straight out the box, as it were. Mm-hmm. There is a little bit of development work that has to happen. I think that makes sense, because you don't want to create an ugly kludge, which I think is kind of what BlackBerry did when it started offering Android apps on its BlackBerry 10 platform. You want the developers to actually put a bit of effort into making it look like a Windows app, and make sure it works properly on the Windows Phone platform. But most of the grunt work of actually developing the apps, you know, you don't have to build it from scratch again from the ground up on Windows 10. And I think this is a very smart move from Microsoft that's going to get them a lot of market share for Windows Phone, which really hasn't taken off in a big way, largely because of this app problem. And this neatly solves it, and it's a very smart move from Microsoft. And I think many of the people who would consider moving to Windows Phone, and I'm among them, would actually do it now if some of these popular apps available for iPhone and Android start becoming available on that platform. In fact, it could put Windows Phone ahead of Android, because there's still a number of apps that are iOS only.
Yeah.
And if those can run on Windows Phone and don't run on Android, then it could put Windows Phone in a very strong position indeed.
Oh yeah. And then if you look at Windows 10 essentially being a free operating system when it comes out, you know, they not only switch things around, but I think they're going to get a lot of new users as a result of it.
It's actually remarkable what they're doing these days, and how much of their software they're giving away for free. I mean, I've been using Microsoft, the next version of Microsoft Office, I think it's 2015 or 2016, for Mac. And it works brilliantly, and it's free until it launches. And I'm an Office 365 subscriber anyway. I pay $1,000 a year, and I get access to it on all the platforms I want to use it on. That's available. You can now get Office for Android, for iOS. Mm-hmm. Heck, they're probably going to start releasing software on Linux soon at this rate.
Yeah.
It's definitely changed Microsoft, and one that's no longer. It's no longer a Windows-first strategy. And it's the right strategy. And I don't think it's all Satya Nadella, by the way. I think Steve Ballmer started this. And I think some credit must go to him, although he's not going to get... history won't be kind to him. I think that he deserves some of the credit for this change. But it's a remarkably changed Microsoft.
And let's not forget, I mean, these things they're doing is so important to a corporate industry who still largely runs on Windows, and a lot of those network administrators are have been up in arms, because there's no real movement in the Windows or Microsoft industry. And now where we're seeing this kind of thing, I think that a lot of network administrators will be rest assured knowing that, okay, there's some movement happening, and we'll be seeing some really interesting things coming from Microsoft as a result, especially from the development platform, giving developers more scope to develop their apps across more platforms or use different platforms to develop their apps on for Windows, which I think is very important.
Mm. There's a very interesting article on The Verge, published, when was this published? Yesterday, the 5th of May, from our recording date. But very interesting headline. I haven't read it yet, but I've sent it to Pocket, and I'm going to read it over the weekend. But very interesting headline. It says, Apple and Microsoft's visions for the future are delightfully different. And the subhead reads, one wants the device at the center of your life, the other one wants to make the device irrelevant.
Mm.
It's an interesting interesting thought. Clash of business models and approaches.
And I think Microsoft must also, if Microsoft looks at Apple's market share and the amount of money that company makes, I think that was a big fire under the bottoms that was lit for them to really, pull out all the stops and become the Microsoft that it should have been 10 years ago.
Yes. It's amazing to see the difference compared to just Microsoft 3 years ago and where they are today, and how people are talking differently about the company now, and people are excited about the future of Microsoft again.
Yeah.
And you're starting to see it in the share price too, which has been ticking up. It's put out some good numbers the other day, and it's sitting close to its 52-week high at the moment.
Brilliant.
And, not actually far off its all-time high set back in the middle of the dot-com bubble.
Jeez. And for me, just on a final note there, there's so many little things that Microsoft's also been doing lately that I go, this is something that was needed so many years ago. I mean, I reinstalled an old Windows 7 machine the other day, and I was looking for ISO. I didn't have it. Obviously, I went to a torrent site to see what was available, but I don't like downloading operating systems on torrent sites, obviously. And then I found out that Microsoft, actually, you can download, if you have your serial key, it was for Windows 7 Home Edition or Professional or something, you can actually download an official ISO
through a torrent.
Through their website.
Oh yes.
So you put in your key, and they will say to you, okay, this is the operating system you have, download the even if it's Windows 7, even if it's old, you know, it doesn't. And I like that kind of thing. And then they make it more accessible because a lot of people still have old machines. They're not forcing you to do, you know, to boot up to the latest stuff. They're making it available. It's. I mean, a few years ago, it was impossible to get any software directly downloaded from Microsoft's website unless you had a TechNet subscription.
Yes. No, it's brilliant. Yeah. And I've been running Windows 10. Technical preview, which I had a bit of a hiccup with. My computer stopped working. I had to remove a graphics card, but apart from that, it's been working quite well.
Early adopter syndrome.
indeed. I've since moved from the fostering to the slow ring of updates. So hopefully, I'm not going to install a bit of rogue Microsoft software that's going to crash my machine and result in it having to go into the shop for some surgery.
Yeah. But look, that's the kind of thing we kind of expect when we. I mean, as early adopters and people that try and run these things before they release, it's like a gamble you take, but it's still worth it. I mean, Windows 10 is a great operating system.
Yeah, it's looking good. I like what they're doing. For the first time, I actually feel that I get what they were trying to do with Windows 8. And they've integrated the desktop and the touch first environment well now, I think.
I
still haven't seen Windows 10 running on a tablet yet, so I don't know what that experience is like and how much of the desktop you actually see.
Oh yeah.
But
it should be it should scale quite nicely.
Cool. Let's do our winner and loser segment. Our winner this week is an easy one. It's Elon Musk,
without a doubt.
I think we've explained why earlier in the show, so we'll move right along to our loser this week, and that's Eskom for a rather bizarre story that we picked up via News24 this week about a machine that they apparently lost to some criminal syndicate in where was it, Limpopo?
Code dispensing machine, right?
Yeah, let me read this. Eskom said its revenue has increased since the arrest of members of a Limpopo prepaid electricity syndicate who were allegedly enriching themselves with old vending machines. The company said it had been losing at least 400 million rand a year as a result of a credit dispensing unit machine stolen by the syndicate 6 years ago. Now, the story is absolutely bizarre because apparently this machine will only stop issuing these vouchers in 2024.
Wow.
If it's not retrieved by Eskom.
And it's offline, so there's no ways to remotely disable it or to disable the codes that it dispenses.
Yes, apparently. Absolutely remarkable how Eskom, you know, even thought of releasing something like this into the wild.
It's crazy. And it's, I mean, that's a lot of money. And if you consider the problems that they're having with electricity today, I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah, indeed. Indeed. Anyway, the dangers of recording a podcast in the suburbs is that someone's just fired up a lawnmower.
Let's wrap it up.
Let's get on to our picks of the week. Richard, what have you got this week?
So my pick isn't particularly new, but it's something that it's an app that I've recently started playing with again because I'm a Mac user. It's Parallels Desktop. So Parallels Desktop is a virtualization software that allows me to run any operating system within macOS, obviously. But I've been using it to run Windows 10 and do some experimentation and play with the software. There was a few apps that I needed that's not on macOS either, so you know, from that point of view, it helped me to access those applications. The last time I used a virtualization software like this was probably 5 years ago, and I'm very impressed with how slick it is now and how effortlessly it works and how well it integrates with my files on macOS already. I mean, I'm just showing Duncan here, but if you look at my desktop, all the files that are on my Mac desktop is actually available as files, usable files on my Windows 10 desktop.
Very cool.
So it's almost like an invisible layer between the two. And it's been solid. I mean, and just the ability to quickly fire up Windows within Mac without having to go into boot camp, which is what I used to do.
Right.
It's well worth it, and for $70 that I paid for it, so it's just under 1,000 rand. It's well worth it, and the operating system's free, so I can't complain.
Yeah, looks good. Looks very good.
And the power is good. The power is good. It's running applications.
You fire up apps and it's fast. How much RAM have you got in that computer?
Oh, this is a 16 gig machine.
16 gig.
This is a powerhouse. And with my SSD, it helps.
Okay.
So, I mean, your experience might vary if you have a slow machine, but on a Mac, you shouldn't have a problem. It scales quite nicely to speed. And when I fire up an application, I can assign in settings how, you know, is this going to be a design virtual machine, or is this going to be a gaming virtual machine? Or is it just going to be a web browser? So it assigns resources accordingly. So Parallels, it's old software, but the latest version, very impressive. Cool. If you have that need, go for it.
Cool. My pick this week is something I can actually do with now, given the background lawnmower sounds. But that's it's a new set of headphones from Bose. They're not cheap. It's the Bose QC25. They retail in the US for about $299. So you're looking at probably the upper 4,000s here on retail.
Yeah, yeah.
I did a lot of research on this pair of headphones. I've owned a few headphones over the last 20 years or so, and I've tended just to buy on impulse, walk into a store, hey, check these out, chill, check those out, those look pretty good. I know that brand, I bought those. I made a big mistake buying a pair of Beats headphones, by the way. The quality of those is really not worth the price.
So are you selling a pair of Beats headphones then, I guess?
No, the thing's actually packed up after a year and a half or so. But the quality was never that great, and I wasn't particularly impressed with them, so I won't be buying another pair of Beats. But the Bose QC25s, which is their pair of headphones I went for, are absolutely remarkable. They're the best noise cancelling I've heard in any pair of headphones. And the quality of the sound is just spectacular. It's not tuned for any particular type of music. It's just refined. It's hard to describe, but if you look in the market for a pair of headphones, go and test out a few in your local electronics store and put on the QC25s and just take a listen to the sound quality difference compared to other headphones in the same price range.
Yeah.
And I think you'll be blown away by the quality. Very, very good, and I'm very happy with that purchase. So if you're looking for a decent pair of high-end, over-the-ear noise-cancelling headphones, the Bose QC25 is the best I've heard.
Yeah, yeah. You probably need a small home loan or a small bank loan to take them, but you'll have decent sound, right?
Decent sound. And I do a lot of writing, obviously, I find if I need to write a piece quickly and I need to get away from what's happening around me, I pop into a restaurant or even, sit in the office or whatever, I just pop the headphones on and it doubles my productivity. I just get lost in the music. I usually put on some heavy rock I can pump out a story pretty quickly. So it's a no-brainer spending that money because it's a productivity enhancer. Well, that's my justification anyway.
But it is impressive. I had a quick listen to these, and the sound, the noise cancellation is really good. It just blocks out all the sound. Right?
Yeah.
I think that enhances the music experience too.
And that wasn't the Bose cutting out the lawnmower. That was the lawnmower running out of petrol.
But the effect is almost the same.
Absolutely. Great. Well, that's the show for this week. As always, if you have any feedback, we'd love to hear from you. info@techcentral.co.za or leave a post on the entry. From Richard and myself, have a great weekend. Until next time. Cheers.
Ciao, ciao.